Good evening, welcome. It's December 29th, 2023 of the Common Era, and the time is 18:15 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again today. I'm very, very happy to see you. It's going to be fairly short reading for some of the chapters today, I hope. We're going to have more time to talk, perhaps. Oh, by the way, I've just discovered that bioflavonoids are crucial in suppressing the symptoms or, you know, resolving, curing arthritis. Not just the symptoms, but it's overall health. When you have your overall health, you don't get arthritis. But quercetin is a supplement you can take that is an element that is also found in matcha tea, and I wasn't taking my matcha tea, and that's when I noticed my arthritis came back, and then I realized I also didn't take my bioflavonoids at the same time because I was running out of the vitamin C that had the bioflavonoids in it. So both those things happened at where I stopped drinking the matcha tea, or I wasn't drinking as much of it, and I wasn't taking my vitamin C with bioflavonoids because I ran out of it. I was taking vitamin C without bioflavonoids. My arthritis came back. I thought of the bioflavonoids as the cause. And then I realized I found I had some quercetin. But first I had to discover, I discovered what quercetin was, first of all, that you can take it instead of bioflavonoids, or it's like a bioflavonoid, or it is a bioflavonoid, or whatever it is, I'm just learning about it. It's a phenomenal supplement that you can take instead of bioflavonoids. And I had a 10-year-old, unopened, expired for 8 years container of quercetin, which is probably still fine because it's very stable. So I'm taking that, and it's working. I think it's working fine, but I just started taking that today. Quercetin is a supplement that can give you more of your health, in addition to all the other things that I also have mentioned. Now, today's study, Little Children, is from Crucible of Credible Creed, C Cubed, Chapter 3, Paragraph 6, and it's got a new subheading, Genealogy of Tutankhamun from Thutmose I. To finally understand the chronology of the Bible is truly thrilling, and we do possess the Holy Grail, when we understand that time may be simply a way to study history, because events dated to a specific time may all be studied to find connections, although they may appear unconnected. Only the possessor of this chronology knows where to look. Once we know where to look in time for specific events, we can test any historical account to see if it makes sense, or if we can rewrite the history to better fit the dating. Another aspect of chronology is that it validates history. The truthfulness of historical accounts may be questioned, but the fit of facts to existing chronology is convincing. If a story can be dated, it thus finds a place in history. Transforming the chronology is a different kettle of fish. Here, even the slightest change can be a whale of a job. There is thus ample reason to establish a chronology first before attempting to use that chronology to write history. No history makes any sense without an accurate chronology. The details of the interrelationships between people, such as marriages and diplomacy, depend upon the precise dates. An error in the dating of one group can negate such facts. Corrected history might serve these facts up on a platter, but true chronology is a dish. An error is a basket case. Chronology cups some facts in it, keeping other facts out. Time will tell in due time, and may time wait for no man. A piece of rock contains a great sculpture, but only where a master can discern to leave it lie and remove the rest. The walls of Troy contained a great city, as a tray foods. That's not to say that there weren't many people who lived outside the walls, any more than that all food is entree. The prophet Jonah was swallowed by a fish and carried his message to the city of Nineveh and the king of that city. If the king were Assyrian king Adad-nirari III, as thought by some, the time of Jonah would be contemporary with that king's reign. Providing only that we could date the reign. Later in this article, we date the Assyrian kings, and we find the reign of King Adad-nirari III to be 856 to 827 BCE. Earlier in the article Green, we had put Jonah at 844 BCE, although that was based on a different timeline. The reference work, Insight on the Scriptures, notes that Jonah apparently served as a prophet to the 10-tribe kingdom of Israel during the rule of King Rehoboam II, as the word spoken by Jonah is mentioned at 2 Kings 14:23-35. That is the Norse version, the Norse language, Norwegian translation of it, but we're going to look at the English translation. In the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Jehoash, the king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of King Joash of Israel, became king in Samaria, and he reigned for 41 years. He continued to do what was bad in Jehovah's eyes. He did not depart from all the sins that Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, had caused Israel to commit. He restored the boundary of Israel from Libo Hamath, clear to the Sea of the Arabah, according to the word that Jehovah, the God of Israel, spoke through his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet from Gath-Hepher. So, there Jonah is mentioned along with Jeroboam II, but based on that scripture, they date Jonah's prophecy to the time of King Jeroboam, about 844 BCE, whereas we date the King Jeroboam II as ruling 826 to 785 after King Adad-nirari III reigned in Assyria, which appears a feasible scenario with Jonah preaching prior to King Jeroboam II in 826 BCE. That's the end of our reading of the Crucible article for today. Our proverb for today is Proverbs 18 and 15. The heart of the understanding one acquires knowledge, and the ear of wise ones seeks to find knowledge, little children. Our study of the book of 1 Kings, we're now in chapter 4, I believe. Check this out. That's correct, I believe. And King Solomon continued king over all Israel. And these are the princes that he had: Azariah, the son of Zadok, the priest, Elihoreph, and Ahijah, the sons of Shisha, secretaries, Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, the recorder, and Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the army, and Zadok and Abiathar were priests. And Azariah, the son of Nathan, was over the deputies. And Zabad, the son of Nathan, was a priest, the friend of the king. And Ahishar was over the household. And Adoniram, the son of Abda, over those conscripted for forced labor. And Solomon had 12 deputies over all Israel, and they provided the king and his household with food. It would devolve upon each one to provide the food 1 month in the year. And these were their names: the son of Hur in the mountainous region of Ephraim, the son of Deker in Makaz and in Shealbim, and Bethshemesh and Elon Bethhanan, the son of Hesed in Aruboth. He had Soko and all the land of Hefer, the son of Abinadab, all the mountain ridge of Dor, Taphath. Solomon's daughter herself became his wife. Baana, the son of Ahilud, in Taanak and Megiddo, and all Bethshean, which is beside Zarethan, below Jezreel, from Bethshean to Abel-Mehola, to the region of Jokmeam, the son of Geber in Ramoth-Gilead. He had the tent villages of Jair, the son of Manasseh, which are in Gilead. He had the region of Argob, which is in Bashan, 60 large cities with wall and copper bar. Ahinadab, the son of Iddo, in Mahanaim. Ahimaaz in Naphtali. He too took Basemath, Solomon's daughter, as a wife. Baana, the son of Hushai, in Asher and Baaloth. Jehoshaphat, the son of Peruah, in Issachar. Shimei, the son of Elah, in Benjamin. Geber, the son of Uri, in the land of Gilead, the land of Sihon, the king of the Amorites, and of Og, the king of Bashan. And there was one deputy over all the other deputies that were in the land. Judah and Israel were many, like the grains of sand that are by the sea, for multitude, eating and drinking and rejoicing. As for Solomon, he proved to be ruler over all the kingdoms from the river, which is, of course, the Euphrates River, as usual, to the land of the Philistines and to the boundary of Egypt, which would be all the way from the Euphrates River to the Mediterranean coast, the eastern Mediterranean coast, and the boundary of Egypt to the south and southwest. They were bringing gifts and serving Solomon all the days of his life. And Solomon's food for each day regularly proved to be 30 core measures of fine flour and 60 core measures of flour, 10 fat cattle and 20 pastured cattle and 100 sheep, besides some stags and gazelles and roebucks and fattened cuckoos. For he was holding in subjection everything this side of the river, from Tifsa to Geza, even all the kings this side of the river, and peace itself became his in every region of his all around. And Judah and Israel continued to dwell in security, everyone under his own vine and under his own fig tree, from Dan to Beersheba, all the days of Solomon. And Solomon came to have 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. And these deputies supplied food to King Solomon and everyone approaching the table of King Solomon, each one in his month. They left nothing lacking, and the barley and the straw for the horses and for the teams of horses they kept bringing to wherever the place might prove to be, each one according to his commission. And God continued giving Solomon wisdom and understanding in very great measure and a broadness of heart, like the sand that is upon the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom was vaster than the wisdom of all the Orientals and than all the wisdom of Egypt. And he was wiser than any other man, than Ethan the Ezrahite and Heman and Chalcol and Darda the sons of Mahol. And his fame came to be in all the nations all around. And he could speak 3,000 proverbs, and his songs came to be 1,005. And he would speak about the trees, from the cedar that is in Lebanon to the hyssop that is coming forth on the wall. And he would speak about the beasts and about the flying creatures and about the moving things and about the fishes. And they kept coming from all the peoples to hear Solomon's wisdom, even from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. And that's the end of 1 Kings chapter 4. So a lot of food was provided to Solomon. Of course, he didn't eat much of it. It was eaten by all the people who sat at his table, for the most part. For he was so wise, he had many, many guests coming, and he had many people for whom he supplied food. We have now the reading from Ezekiel, which is chapter 6. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, Son of man, set your face toward the mountains of Israel and prophesy to them. And you must say, O mountains of Israel, hear the word of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. This is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah has said to the mountains and to the hills, to the stream beds and to the valleys. Here I am bringing upon you a sword, and I shall certainly destroy your high places, and your altars must be made desolate, and your incense stands must be broken. And I will cause your slain ones to fall before your dungy idols. And I will put the carcasses of the sons of Israel before their dungy idols, and I will scatter your bones all around your altars. In all your dwelling places, the very cities will become devastated, and the high places themselves will become desolated, in order that they may lie devastated, and your altars may lie desolated, and be actually broken, and your dungy idols may be actually made to cease, and your incense stands cut down, and your works wiped out. And the slain one will certainly fall in the midst of you, and you will have to know that I am Jehovah. And when it occurs, I will let you have as a remnant the ones escaping from the sword among the nations, when you get scattered among the lands, and your escaped ones will certainly remember me among the nations to which they will have been taken captive, because I have been broken up at their fornicating heart that is turned aside from me, and at their eyes that are going in fornication after their dungy idols. And they will certainly feel a loathing in their faces at the bad things that they have done in all their detestable things, and they will have to know that I am Jehovah. Not in vain did I speak about doing to them this calamitous thing. This is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Clap your hands and stamp with your foot and say, alas, on account of all the bad, detestable things of the house of Israel, because by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence they will fall. As for the one far away, by the pestilence he will die, and as for the one that is nearby, by the sword he will fall. And as for the one that has been left remaining, and that has been safeguarded, by the famine he will die, and I will bring to its finish my rage against them. And you people will have to know that I am Jehovah, when their slain ones come to be in the midst of their dungy idols, all around their altars, upon every high hill, on all the tops of the mountains, and under every luxuriant tree, and under every branchy big tree, the place where they have offered a restful odor to all their dungy idols. And I will stretch out my hand against them and make the land a desolate waste, even a desolation worse than the wilderness toward Diblah, in all their dwelling places, and they will have to know that I am Jehovah. That's the end of Ezekiel chapter 6. And of course, Ezekiel prophesied, the first chapter, as we mentioned, began in the fifth year of the exile of Jehoiakim, which was the year of exile, 597. So 593 was approximately the year of this book of Ezekiel for the beginning of his writing of the book itself. And so, but this is, that makes it only beginning to be written about 6 years before the desolation and destruction of Jerusalem and its temple, Solomon's temple, in 587 BCE. So it's this prophecy of Ezekiel about the punishment that Jehovah is about to deliver upon the Israelites is not far away. The prophecy is not far from being fulfilled in terms of how many years remain. It's only a very few years that remain until this prophecy will be carried to completion, when Nebuchadnezzar completely destroys the temple and takes captives, and you know, many people die in the siege, of course, of Jerusalem when they starve. Many things go wrong during a time when Jerusalem is destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. Of course, it's a terrible time for Israel. Now we've got the book of 2 John. The older man to the chosen lady and to her children, whom I truly love, and not I alone, but all those also who have come to know the truth, because of the truth that remains in us, and it will be with us forever. There will be with us undeserved kindness, mercy, and peace from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, with truth and love. I rejoice very much, because I have found certain ones of your children walking in the truth, just as we received commandment from the Father. So now I request you, lady, as a person writing you, not a new commandment, but one which we had from the beginning, that we love one another. And this is what love means, that we go on walking according to his commandments. This is the commandment, just as you people have heard from the beginning, that you should go on walking in it. For many deceivers have gone forth into the world, persons not confessing Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh. This is the deceiver and the Antichrist. Look out for yourselves that you do not lose the things we have worked to produce, but that you may obtain a full reward. Everyone that pushes ahead and does not remain in the teaching of the Christ does not have God. He that does remain in this teaching is the one that has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, never receive him into your homes or say a greeting to him. For he that says a greeting to him is a sharer in his wicked works. Although I have many things to write you, I do not desire to do so with paper and ink, but I am hoping to come to you and to speak with you face to face, that your joy may be in full measure. The children of your sister, the chosen ones, send you their greetings. It's the end of 2 John. It's a short letter. The sister is probably another congregation, and the children of the sister are probably the members of that congregation. And so he's writing to a particular congregation, mentioning another congregation, and he refers to this congregation in verse 1 as the chosen lady and her children, the members of the congregation. At least that's what it appears to be. Rather than to a particular single woman or one woman and her children, but doesn't rule out that meaning also. It has that meaning as well. And that concludes our study for today, little children. We've got a couple of days remaining in this year, 2023 of the Common Era. We've still got 10 minutes at least here to talk about something such as we might choose to talk about for the remaining time of our video, if we want to. I was saying I just discovered the importance of bioflavonoids, and quercetin is one of these types of plant-based, phytonutrients, or things that phyto in the sense of plant-based nutrients, which are so crucial for our health, apparently. I mean, it's something we're still learning about every single day. And even those people who study nutrition are learning constantly about more nutrients and more details about those nutrients, because it's potentially a complex matter. Now, when we're thinking about nutrition, it doesn't help us to think of it as being complex. If we think of it as being complex, then we might never try to figure out what was happening with our nutrition. It's far more useful to think of it as being simple. Try to imagine that it's simple, even though it's not simple. We know it's complex in reality, but when we're trying to understand it, we need to believe that it's simple so that we can believe that it's possible for us to understand it. That's important, that we can believe that it's understandable for us, and then we can start to learn what things benefit us, how things work. It's important to also believe one thing, which is also a simple idea, which is that in general, nutrients don't interact with each other, not very much in general, so that we can take a handful of this or type of food, and a handful of that food, and a handful of this food, or several supplements and several of those and several of these, all different kinds of vitamins and minerals and nutrients, like vitamin B12, iodine, glutathione, vitamin E in the D-alpha, or what is it, D-alpha? D-alpha tocopherol form of vitamin E. The glutathione should be taken in the precursor form, not the fully formed form, I believe, anyway, because that encourages your body to do some of the work. Whereas if you take the fully formed, which you could do, but your body might give up on producing its own glutathione if you take the fully formed glutathione as a supplement. But glutathione goes well with vitamin E in terms of supplementation. And there's another supplement that can be taken is amino acids, which I take in the form of Freeminos, which is a brand name of amino acids. And I take the vitamin K2 supplements are so important for proper metabolism of everything, including especially calcium and magnesium and vitamin D, which work only when supplemented with K2 or when the K2 is in the diet. It's hard to get vitamin K2 in the diet. It's in grass-fed dairy products and meat products, but it can be supplemented as, for example, there are two possible forms which are commonly available, and there are 9 known forms of vitamin K2, but the two commonly available ones are MK7, which is, and they're both fat soluble. MK7 is one form of K2. So it's MK7 because M stands for menaquinone, which is K2 form, whereas phylloquinone is K1. The K1 vitamin being found in leafy greens, but K2 is the one we're talking about. M, menaquinone, which is K2. MK7, the K being vitamin K. So menaquinone, vitamin K is MK. And 7 is the length of the molecule chain. So MK7 is a longer chain than MK4. And the MK7 is not able to cross the blood-brain barrier, which makes MK4 especially powerful because it can cross the blood-brain barrier. And MK4 stays in your body for only about 4 hours, whereas MK7 is in there for about 72 hours. It's much longer lived biologically, MK7 is. And you always take these MK vitamins, always, the K2 vitamins are always taken with vitamin D, always with vitamin D. So vitamin D is very important in the diet, not just for the assistance in absorbing minerals like calcium, also because of the vital need for vitamin D to be present when vitamin K2 is present. And you also want to have vitamin K2 present always with vitamin D. You don't want to take D without K2, because D creates a need for K2 in the body. According to the expert naturopath, Dr. Kate Rayon-Blue, for example, the Ontario naturopath, she's not the only one who says this either, but vitamin D creates a need for vitamin K2 in the body. So that's important. And also, I learned today, quercetin has a role to play with regard to vitamin D and the vitamin D receptors. Vitamin D receptors are where the vitamin D plays the big role in the body as a hormone, like in the intestines, where it assists in the absorption of minerals, for example. But quercetin has a role, and they're not necessarily entirely sure at all about how it works, but quercetin has a role in the functioning of the vitamin D receptors. It's absolutely believed that there's a role that quercetin plays there. So that's a reason why quercetin should be taken. But onions have quercetin, is one source. And I was saying matcha tea has quercetin, and you can get it in bioflavonoids in fruit, for example. If you take fruit, apples have quercetin, but not a lot. But, you know, a very small amount, like 4 milligrams per apple or something. Whereas I took 250 milligrams in one supplement capsule today of quercetin. So that's an example of how you can get quercetin is in apples, or you can get it from a supplement. But another thing, onions, I said, has quercetin. I learned that, all of that I learned today. And these are plant, you know, quercetin is one plant-based nutrient, and there are other plant-based nutrients, and that's why I think matcha tea is so healthy, because it has many, many plant-based nutrients like chlorophyll, and oh, it's got so many good things in it. So when I take the matcha tea, it does have caffeine too, but it has these phytonutrients, these plant-based nutrients that wake you up, maybe more than the caffeine, just by having this powerful, like greens, you know, it's like greens, because you eat the matcha tea, you don't just make tea from the leaves. You eat the leaves with matcha tea. You actually consume the leaves themselves of the tea. So you're getting everything that's in that tea leaf of the matcha tea plant. And it is powerful. The matcha tea plant is a powerful, powerful nutrient. It's probably very powerful also as an antioxidant. I know it's benefited me immensely ever since the very day that I discovered that I could use it. And the other thing about it, it may not be tasty if you're not used to it, or if you don't have an acquired taste for it. So what you can do is add something to it, something like your favorite sweetener, like maybe honey or maple syrup, or I use maple syrup. You can add a sweetener to it, whatever is your choice for sweetener, to make it palatable. And I was taking it for a long, long time as a latte, and I I made it cold. I made it as a cold latte with milk or cream, and I added some water to dilute it, I think, but I can't remember now how I used to make it. But nowadays I make it more with water, and then I add a little bit of cream or some calcium. But I'm taking so much vitamin D every day, about 32,000 units or more every day of vitamin D, so that the calcium that I do take, even if I only take a smaller amount of it, I believe I'm getting close to the right amount, you know, because of the increased ability to absorb it by adding the vitamin D. But there's so many things to learn, and learning is every single day. Like I learned just the other day that I can't stop taking the matcha tea and the bioflavonoids, both of which have quercetin, that I need apparently for it's anti-arthritis, and I didn't even realize that was a factor here in all the things I'm taking. I had no idea. So that's something new I learned. That's the end of today's video. It's December 29th. 2023 of the Common Era, and the time is 1848 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. It's been wonderful to be with you. I love you very much. On my behalf, this is Gully, my wind-up chronograph and timekeeper, and Cassie, my digital electronic watch, saying bye for now.